extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Wow, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental Tire from Kansas City. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, David Goss, Matt Doyle. It's our, one of our favorite shows of the year. Soccer is here. Major League Soccer is back. No more hypotheticals, no more guesses, no more saying, yeah, I think this might happen, but you can't hold me to it. No, there were games. 13 games this weekend. We watched them. You enjoyed them. We're going to break them all down right here on this show. Oh, guys, it's wonderful. It's wonderful to start a weekend, have a schedule, see lineups come out, set your fantasy team, and win, might I add, in my case. 65 points was just enough. I snuck over the line. How did you enjoy your weekend? Before we get to all the nitty-gritty, before we get to Chicharito and the Galaxy and their inspirational win and post-game interviews, the Sounders, of course, winning that Western Conference final rematch. Austin FC losing, but still having hope and some misery for CCL clubs. Tell me about your weekend. Let me live vicariously through you because I'm juggling kids, in case you didn't know I'm a dad.
I consumed Major League Soccer from every angle physically possible at the same time in my home and abode. It was amazing. Friday night was fun, energetic, sat on the back porch, got some pizzas, invited people over, distanced socially outside. And then Saturday as well, just watching all the games. Sunday, finishing it up. It was phenomenal. I am Major League Soccer right now. There's nothing you could bring up that I wouldn't bring back to an MLS reference. You could talk to me about the Celtics if you want, and I'd be like, oh, yeah, that's kind of similar to how Kendall Costa played at left back for the Colorado Rapids, but still worked out, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, so who's good? Yeah, Montreal, CF Montreal at the top of the Eastern Conference. Up is down, down is up, MLS is back. It's all very normal. Doyle, what was the highlight for you? When you watched these games, you, of course, did your MLS analyst column that everybody reads on Mondays. What was the big highlight? What stuck with you?
The quality of the goals, and it wasn't just the bangers. It was, you know, special buildup from Chicago, their first one. I think the Sounders, the second Raul Diaz one, like it didn't look like week one. Week one in the past has tended to be pretty choppy. And to be fair, there were some games like that, but like, I don't know. I just felt like the quality of play for week one this year is higher than what we tended to see in the recent past. So I was really pretty jacked about that.
To be fair, week one this year is more like week four in previous years.
Yeah.
Nah, I'm just kidding. We didn't have the month of games for teams to get going. If you want to know what the group chat was like for us the entire weekend, the producer Anders' reminder of the day is this: never count out the heart of a champion. All caps. Don't call it a comeback. The Sounders were never gone. Of course, we're going to hit that one hard. A big win against...
The heart of a what? What are the Sounders champions of right now?
Champion right here. Yeah. That's what it says.
I guess champions of the Western Conference. Fair. They did it again to Minnesota United. Well, Hang that banner.
Most Seattle thing ever. Literally getting a belt created for something that doesn't exist. Just walking around. We got the Western Conference belt.
It's locked
no
up, baby.
No one else has it.
1 week. That's all that matters. At the all-new MLSsoccer.com, of course, you were following the action there this weekend. All the highlights, news, everything you need to know from MLS Week 1. Steve Zakuani had the breakdown on Saturday night. I think he's going to be doing that all year. So check that out. Of course, you had your armchair analyst, Colin Doyle. The call-up, by the way, on Tuesday has Austin FC's Ben Sweat. They lost to LAFC 2-0. And there was an interesting moment in that one, which we'll get into, in which Carlos Vela, the captain of my fantasy team, pulled up a little lame, made a signal. Bob Bradley did not interpret that signal the way...
Oh, sorry.
Oh, what?
Can I go too quickly there?
Oh, yeah, so you jumped in. Yeah, you're bad? Did you jump the gun? Okay,
That's just going to be on me.
Okay, I guess, am I out for the whole show? Do I have to sit on the bench now and just like give you dirty looks? Okay, we'll talk about Carlos Vela's early removal.
I would love Eddie Opoku to come on and co-host this show.
Oh, okay. Right, hey, give him a call, man. Give him a call. If you want him, he can show up maybe. Shout out, by the way, to our weekly fantasy winner, Inter-Miami, Sofredor, that's his team name, he had 101 points. He's the only team to get over 100 in our league. He beat out the next closest team by 3 points. He captain Gonzalo Higuain. Surprise, surprise on that one. His name is Inter Miami Sofredor, and it has Miami logo. That's it. So congratulations to him. If you want to get into our league, we'll tweet that link out once again. We are going to start this show the way we will start every Monday show with Weeby's big narrative of the weekend. You know, I'm a narrative guy. Reddit MLS tells me that I'm a little too focused on those, but my God, how can you not enjoy that LA Galaxy win in South Florida on Sunday on ABC? I'm sure we all watched it. Five goals, a good duel, good quality there, big stars, whether it be in the stands, of course, David Beckham and his entire family and entourage, Tom Brady is there, and then Chicharito and Higuain. Chicharito, two goals. Chicharito with the most inspirational post-game interview I've ever heard in my life. We will play that for you in just a little bit because it was that good. What did you think of this game, Doyle? What did you think of Chicharito's performance? This felt like, to me, like a guy who had a year and a half of weight on his shoulders and desperately just needed a moment. Needed a moment to be a little bit like his old self. Needed a moment to be a little bit vulnerable in a public sense. And we've made fun of him a little bit, or at least I have a lot, about the Instagram workouts and whether those were going to actually turn into production. And we don't know what the rest of the season is going to look like. It could be more of 2020 for him. This might not be some like big indication of a golden boot run to come. But I was personally just really happy for the guy. You can see what it meant to him. And not just his goals. Like Sasha Kljestan scores that winner, a beautiful curler in off the post. And he is on cloud nine. After the game, he's saying, don't look at me. Talk about Ethan Zubak. Talk about Sasha. Talk about Greg Vanney's changes. Like it felt like this moment that he had desperately needed for a year and a half. And to see him get it, I mean, it gave me a lot of feels.
You could see it on his face and hear it in his voice in that post-game interview, which was remarkable. And I thought John Champion and Taylor Twellman did a good job of making that moment live a little bit longer and going a little bit long, because Chicharito, I think you're right, Weeby. He clearly needed that. As for the game itself, for an hour, I don't want to say it was all Inter Miami, but it was primarily Inter Miami. They played better soccer than the Galaxy did. And I think what changed it was going to a 4-4-2 and bringing Ethan Zubak on. And in that situation, Zubak was able to kind of occupy the other defenders, the central defenders, so that Chicharito didn't have to do that. Chicharito didn't have to find the defenders and make their lives hard. He just had to find space. And if you look at his two goals, I mean, the first one is just classic Chicharito goal, where he's, feinting that hard run to the back post, and then he cuts across the box, gets, inside the defender, amazing touch, and then finish at an angle. And then the second one is like a Wando goal, just, crash the boards and be the first to the rebound, and there's nobody around you because the big center forward is occupying everybody. So it was a great performance from him. I thought even when he and the Galaxy were struggling in that 4-2-3-1, he was more up for it than he looked at most points last year. And then the change to the 4-4-2 changed the game, and Phil Neville never really adjusted. And if you don't adjust to a guy who has scored 300 goals in his life, which is what Chicharito is, you're probably going to end up on the wrong side of the scoreboard. And that's exactly what happened.
In fairness to him, John McCarthy should catch that ball, and it should have a minimum beat
too. No, I think that first one was actually tough, right? Because
no, the second one, the tapping.
Sorry, the second one. So I think that was actually really tough, because as a goalkeeper there, you're kind of stranded because you're playing for the header, but you're trying to make yourself big in order to prevent the ball from going straight in off a cross. Like, we've seen that a million times. I thought McCarthy actually did well to get a hand on it. And it's just like, it's unlucky that nobody was on the back post, maybe tracking Chicharito and being as awake to the danger as he was.
Yeah, that's fair. It's interesting with Chicharito, because then that first 60 minutes, I agree with you, he was more up for it. But there was a few moments where they tried to hit in transition, and he's always going to be the guy he is. He's not going to be a threat that often outside of the 18. And finally, once Zubak comes in, now he's in his wheelhouse, and he's one of, he's going to be elite in MLS if you get him there. He's not going to change who he is, and he's not going to be, I think of Rooney, but you could talk about Keane or other guys who came to this league and maybe did things they hadn't done at other times in their career just because of their overall ability and IQ and whatever it is. Chicharito, the thing he does well is live in the box and score goals. And once they got him in that area, he showed that he's ready to do it this year. And so it's a positive going forward, it's exactly what the Galaxy needed.
Two goals, same as 2020. If you didn't hear the interview, MLSsoccer.com, we'll give you a snippet right here. I mean, it was emotional stuff.
And it's wonderful to see from a sportsman such open emotion in celebrating on the field of play.
I'm holding my tears. I mean, I suffered the loss of my grandfather. I would love him to keep me watching, scoring goals. And yeah, I mean, I'm very touching because, like I told you, last season was very difficult. I miss him so much, and these goals are from them, from my kids, from my whole family, my friends, everyone. Because, yeah, I mean, I maintain patience. I keep grinding, and thankfully things are coming around. And hopefully, like I tell, I just want to be a part of an unbelievable season and leave the trophy.
I mean, this was the narrative. I've been talking about this a lot, and whether he can get back into El Tri or not doesn't really matter. But for Chicharito, this is his career. It's his life. And in the first answer on that interview, he said that, you know, all the pressure that he felt, all the people he felt responsibility to, whether it be his family or himself or the people within the Galaxy organization that gave him this responsibility. I thought it was an incredible moment on live TV for him to show that sort of vulnerability. And I don't think you see that very often from athletes. I don't think you see that very often, to be perfectly honest, from just people in general, whether that be in their personal lives or in a public setting like this was for Chicharito on ABC, on national TV, in the U.S. and abroad. To me, this is one of the most special moments off the field that I've actually seen in MLS in a lot of ways, based on everything that we as a society and a world and as people have gone through in the last year. And of course, you know, Chicharito has done the COVID thing just like we all have, and it's not over. But we've seen the headlines. We've talked about the headlines. We've talked about all the gossip and everything else that's surrounded his life, all the different things that have pulled him in different directions over the last year. And then to fail. I mean, he failed last year. To fail in such a high-profile way in this big opportunity and to come back. Yeah, I mean, it's special. It's awesome. We should all try to be Chicharito for the next year or the rest of our lives. Like, be your best self. You know, get fully vaccinated and let 2 weeks pass. Then be your best self. Like, this is, to me, this is the best possible way for the MLS season to start. For one of the stars, one of the guys that everything is built around as far as like, hey, watch this league, care about this league, widen the fan base. To have it work out for him in Miami against David Beckham's team, against Gonzalo Higuain, for the Galaxy, trying to rebuild and trying to become what they used to be again with Greg Vanney at the helm. Like, this was the exact result, the exact scenario they needed, and it still blows my mind as well that we're like, hey, the big center forward came in and changed the game, Ethan Zubac. Like, this is a team performance, and it's awesome. Now, on the Inter-Miami side, you know, other than the two-tone cleats from Rodolfo Pizarro and his performance, a little bit to be desired. Gonzalo Higuain was okay.
Can I?
You know, he had a goal.
Yeah.
I mean, he was
can
okay.
Can I actually say about Pizarro, he was super active. I questioned if he's dangerous enough to be worth what they paid for him coming into this league. And in this game, Phil Neville found a way to get him a ton of space.
Yep.
And he's not a goal scorer, and he's not really a final chance creator. And the big one that stood out to me was in the first half on the break when he had O'Neill Fisher and that's it with 30 yards to goal. And he kind of held up for a little while and then hoped to get a penalty kick that he didn't. And fortunately, he did get the PK later in the game, but it wasn't a dangerous moment that he was going into. That's going to be, if that's how Miami's going to play this year, that's going to be something we're going to talk about the whole year because it's not what he does at his best. And he is not Lucas Zelarayán. And so if the whole game is let's spread the game as wide as we can and let's get Pizarro into killer spaces, I think Miami's going to struggle.
Is that on him, that break? And I'm just talking about that specific moment. Like, nobody's
They scored two goals, and he was central to both of them.
Yeah,
and
I thought he was pretty good.
One was a penalty kick that wasn't a dangerous moment, right?
Wait, that was completely a dangerous moment. That was completely a dangerous – that was Robbie Robinson, you know, beating a guy on the wing, driving directly towards the box, playing a ball to Pizarro's feet that I think Pizarro was trying to leave for the weak side runner who it was Lewis Morgan at that point. Like that was a dangerous play. All right, well,
there was no reason to foul him there. It wasn't like he was in on goal and about to finish.
That's fair, but okay. like it was still like a good passage of play. And I think for the first 60, 65 minutes, Miami put together a lot of good passages of play. They just weren't quite sharp in the box. And like, maybe that will come with time as Gonzalo Higuain approaches fuller fitness. And, you know,
well, that was my point on the break. He was dragging a yacht behind him. He wasn't even trying to, he wasn't even trying to be a part of that attacking sequence. He was just jogging behind the play.
Really good though. He was really good. I don't know. I think there was a lot to be, positive about from this for Miami. Like, they came out and they played with more commitment in this game than they played at any point last year. I thought they had some pretty good ideas in the final third. They just, like, Phil Neville kind of blew it by not making any subs, not realizing that his entire midfield was dragging, and that, you know, the Pizarro and Matuidi in particular were kind of dead to the world by about the 60th, 65th minute. The subs for the Galaxy and the formation shift for the Galaxy changed the game, and Phil Neville, for whatever reason, could not keep up with that.
You know, MLS is back when LGP gets a yellow card like 42 seconds into the game, right?
Oh my God, I was so sure he was getting a red in this one. I was so certain he was getting a red in this
one. He almost ended with one. He got in someone's face in the last 30 seconds. It was like,
yeah, he was
got there and he was like, I haven't gotten sent off yet. I don't have a lot of time. And gotten someone's face on some play, trying to get the ball restarted quickly.
I mean, this was a game that it gave you a lot of different things. I still think we're going to look for more from Gonzalo Higuain. I know he had the goal and the assist. I know also that Robbie Robinson learned a lesson, or I assume he did, which is when you score a tap-in from Gonzalo Higuain, you go thank the man instead of running away from him. Like, come on. Come on, Robbie, like, show a little bit of respect in that moment. But I think the big question from this one is, who got it better between David Goss and Matt Doyle? David Goss, Pipa Higuain, that's who you got compared to, though your beard has not grown out quite as much as you might like. And then, Doyle, you're Gonzalo. How do you feel about that? People out there really memeing extra time against the Higuain brothers in the midst of this game.
I'll take it. He's a handsome man.
Hey, listen, hey, you're the younger brother. Don't talk too much. I do the talking. I lead this. You might make money, but you're still the younger brother, so don't get out of your britches. Don't get too big for your britches.
Fair enough. All right.
Exactly. When the asada goes on the grill, you know who has the tongs. Pipa. Pipa's got the tongs.
Go grab some more coals.
Exactly. Help me out a little bit. He needs another beer. Exactly. Okay. Need another beer. Okay, you dropped it on that one. Sounders are back. I think that's probably the second biggest story of the weekend here. And I have on here, maybe they never left. The different formation here for Brian Schmetzer. You had Nuhu in a back three, which is awesome. Though Nuhu had the one opportunity late where he's looking at an entire open field and he back passes and runs backwards. And I was like, they've broken Nuhu. This is over. But he had a couple awesome acrobatic clearances, so maybe not. But a big second half, let's say, for the Sounders. First half, I was like, man, Reynoso is the truth, and he is. He's an incredible player. But in the end, it was Christian Roldan, it was the DPs, it was Rui Diaz, it was Will Bruin, it was Freddie Montero. It was a Sounders team that just kind of said, hey, we are who we've been. Don't doubt us. Don't count us out. And hey, Minnesota, move along. Move along.
It felt like they maybe read some of their press clippings and were pretty pissed that people like ourselves are picking them to take a step backwards this year and maybe not regarding them as one of the elite teams in MLS anymore. Not to say they're not good. I think we all have Seattle top four or five in the Western Conference and like, oh, if things go right, they could win a trophy or maybe even two this year. But I still see a team that is thinner than last couple of years, maybe, you know, getting a little old in a couple of spots, though I guess, you know, part of that is like losing Gustav Svensson and Roman Torres. Maybe that's not applicable anymore. But I thought, especially without Nico Ladero and playing against a very good Minnesota United team and trotting out a new formation, I was like, this is going to struggle. This is going to be tough.
Not just without Nico, without Yaimar as well.
Yeah, without Yaimar, which was a coach's decision.
Of the spine. Yeah,
coach's decision there. I thought this had a potential to be a statement win, or at least a statement result for Minnesota United. It was a statement win for the Seattle Sounders. It took them 45 minutes. Second half, it looked like they'd been playing that 3-5-2 forever. And they they caused so many problems for Minnesota with that right side overload. Roldan's movement, well, first of all, his touch in this game was spectacular. I put a couple of clips on up on my Twitter, you know, just dropping back, getting on the ball, like taking one touch out of traffic and then opening the game up with these diagonals to his brother, who looks like, as Anders said, Serginho Dest Light. That's what we call Alex Roldan now. Roldan was spectacular with his touch, but his movement is so smart and so dangerous, and he's able to just create verticality by finding these little pockets. And he put Minnesota in the spin cycle, and everybody in that attack around Roldan, be it Bruin, Rui Diaz, Alex Roldan, whoever was playing left wing back, it was Brad Smith, and then it was Kellen Rowe for a little bit, and Freddie Montero. Like, they're all smart enough to capitalize on the spaces that good movement creates. And like, by the 70th minute, it was clear that Minnesota had no chance and they were about to take a beat down. And that's what happened.
And it's kind of the conversation we had about Seattle. Maybe we didn't think it would happen this quickly. Of, you're talking about experienced high IQ players with a couple of crown jewels that defenses can't ignore. And yep. So you talk about a bunch of guys who can read the space. I think we've said it about Will Bruin and Freddie Montero. Yeah, maybe they're not world beaters right now, but Rui Diaz and Lodero and Roldan are good enough that they can read the openings around them and get opportunities. And I think you saw in this game, Rui Diaz fit, ready to go. And if that's the case for Seattle, they're going to be a threat the whole season because they've got enough pieces defensively and they've got a match winner. And everything else can kind of revolve around that, and you can figure it out, including Jos Atencio being the best player in MLS history. It just leaves the door open for opportunities like that.
Do we want to go full-on Jos Atencio fan club right now, or do we want to go Joao Paulo touch and goal fan club? Because, good Lord, to bring that down with his instep in the most calm way possible, and then just to be like, yeah, I'm just going to absolutely lace this one. I mean, it was Darlin's
goal. Yeah,
it was Nagby's goal from last. It was just incredible. And when that happened, I was like, oh, weekend lit. And you already had the Paul Marie goal from the San Jose Houston game. I was like, oh, this is it, baby. We're off and running. But this is extra time, so we should probably talk Jos Atencio, who I know Anders was jacked about. I know you have seen him a ton, Dave, a ton in GA Cups. What did we see from the kid in this game?
He's confident. He understands where to pick up the ball. He can hit the big switch, which, again, when Dole talked about that overload, there was opportunities and with those wingbacks to kind of open the game up that he was able to do. And then you saw, as the second half wore on, him closer in that final third and willing to be a part of the attack and a part of the buildup and pretty quick with the ball at his feet. You're playing with two of the best midfielders in MLS around you. You don't have to do too much. But I think you saw a good balance of, he was an active piece of it. He was going to get the ball off the back line, being a part of the buildup if he needed to, but not doing too much and overrunning Joao Paulo's space or trying to get in the areas in which Christian Roldan was good. So I think he found that good balance in the first game. You saw Brian Schmetzer after the game talk about it. They asked him to do a job. Like, they didn't ask him to go in and win the game. Go in and be the piece that we need you to be. And I thought he did that, which is huge for, as we talked about in CCL, these homegrowns. This is how you start getting on the field before you really establish who you are and become a central part of a team.
His ball carrying was really good. And I don't think I had seen that from him in the past. Like, once he got on the ball, he was able to drive forward and cause real problems. And then he had good instincts or has been drilled well on how to draw the defense to him and then hit a simple pass to cut those defenders out and put the attackers into good spots. It was really impressive. I still don't know if he's a D-mid. I don't know if he's an eight. I don't know if he's a center back. I know they've used him there a little bit. There were times where his lack of quickness maybe caused him some to be fair, it was against Reynoso where he like got screwed into the ground twice. But it was a super promising 90 minutes from Jos Atencio. And look, there are two things I've dinged Brian Schmetzer for. Historically, one is that his team has never put together a really convincing regular season. And two is that he has not taken any of these talented academy kids from the Sounders and gotten them real chances, real minutes to make them real first team contributors. And part of that is like Danny, he was clearly on that path with Danny Leyva before Leyva got hurt. Atencio, I thought, was going to fade into, you know, just whatever. And clearly,
into Tacoma is what you call it.
Fade into Tacoma. And clearly, that's not the path that he's on right now. And, you know, maybe the same for Ethan Dabalera as well, because I thought he looked not as good, but still promising in his cameo at the end there.
Top of the Supporters Shield standings. Oh, I'm boy. Sure that producer Anders has just been refreshing this page all weekend, just like, oh, yes, 4-goal differential. That's the Seattle Sounders. Big win for them. Now, Minnesota, they had a good first half. There was a moment there where you're thinking, hey, man, the realtors at MLS.com are really going to have to eat one here because, you know, maybe they'd even have Minnesota United high enough because Bebelo Reynoso is unbelievable. Like, I know they lost this game. They kind of got worked over for nothing here, but even in those conditions, you cannot watch this match and not come away just thinking, my God, Reynoso is absolutely incredible. And then when Wanchope came on, there were moments where he said, okay, if he's a 90-minute player or even a 75-minute player, they might have something going here. Now, yes, there are still
Wanchope
some issues on the back
like
line.
Looks like if you built a center forward in a lab but then took someone's random head and threw it on. Like, he is rectangular, to say the least. He was ready to go. What did he shoot twice in his first three touches?
Well, his first touch is the Reynoso ball over like the diagonal into the box that's on his right foot to be finished. He doesn't quite get it. And yeah, then there was another one. I mean, he was goal hungry.
Yeah.
Like, he came in there being like, I'm freaking starving. I have Bebelo on my team. Let's make this happen. I don't know. What is there to talk about with Minnesota other than their second half wasn't good enough? Brent Coleman got spun a couple times. Unlucky PK, I would say. Will Trapp's hand is up. Yeah, but I mean, that's just an unlucky break for them. I don't think he's out here trying to like paddle that thing down. What do you take away from this if you're Adrian Heath, Doyle? What is there to take away?
Nothing. The Sounders played better in the second half, and I still think Minnesota is a good team. You know, maybe take a look at that center back depth chart and figure out if Callum Montgomery or Nabi Kibiguchi, who was their first round pick this year, can edge in there ahead of Coleman, who, I mean, it was pretty clear in the second half that Seattle were targeting him specifically. And that's tough. That's tough on any player. It's especially tough when it's a third or fourth string center back. But I still think Minnesota's a really, really good team. They just got smacked in the mouth in week one.
Yeah, I think that's fair. We'll see what happens with them.
It'll also be interesting just to throw in, if Avila starts, you don't play Dotson on the wing. Does Dotson start in place of Will Trapp in the next game? Or does Ozzie start there? Or do you give Will Trapp another chance? Because I thought that was a part of the field where it got stretched and it got ragged at times. And you mentioned Reynoso looking around kind of being like, who's in this with me? And Dotson's not a winger. So they have the pieces. I'm not questioning any of it as well, but it'll be interesting to see how Adrian Heath handles it going forward.
I truly, before we let this go, I love watching Bebelo Reynoso play because he's not like, he's not a luxury 10. He's a, I might step on your ankle 10. Like he was flirting at points with a double yellow in this game too. And he has like an angry attitude toward him. And maybe that was the conditions in the second half and the scoreline getting away. But even in the first half, like he is, I'm not going to take any bleep sort of player. And I love to see that from a 10.
Him, you hope not, but there had to be a moment where it felt like he was stuck in a rerun, right? His season last year ended with a lead, a great first half against Seattle. And then it all kind of collapsed behind him. And that's what happened in this one. And again, I don't think it's a bigger issue, so I don't want to read too much into it. But there had to be a level of it for him of like, what the hell's going on here?
Yeah, well, we'll see if they can get it back. I think they're going to be a really good team this year, but it was not in this game that they showed that. Seattle with a huge win atop the Supporters Shield standings after 1 week. Austin FC, first we got to see Averde. They go to LAFC. It was a weird start. Yeah, Verde. Very strange start. Carlos Vela was the guy that everybody's watching, everybody's talking about. I mean, I'm going doubles for Supporters Shield and Cup. I'm saying he's going to win MVP and take the Golden Boot. And then he gets accidentally subbed off early by Bob Bradley. Before we get more into this game, I mean, this was the talking point. I know, Anders, you have this queued up. You talk about incredible moments. Well, Chicharito was one after the game. This might have been the most honest in-game interview that I have ever heard.
LAFC coach Bob Riley joining us down the headset. Bob, what can you tell us about the Carlos Vela situation a moment ago?
Yeah, I might have jumped the gun. That might be my fault. I'm not sure. He gave us a sign early on that you know, he needed to come off, I thought. But so I can't say more than maybe it's my fault.
I mean, props to Bob. Sugarcoat that. How did you experience this moment? Because I'm watching it, and I'm like, wait, what's going on here? And then I see Carlos go to the bench, and he's not happy. And I'm like,
wait. But let me ask you guys, watching the game, you thought he was asking for a sub, right?
I did.
Yeah.
That hand motion is not.
He didn't use two hands. He didn't use two hands, right?
He didn't.
He used one hand, did a circle, like saying, get the trainer over here. I in retrospect, I guess that distinction is a different, or difference is a distinction that matters. It was bizarre. It was not how I expected the first game of the year to go.
And by the way,
for anyone who didn't watch, Diego Rossi fails a fitness test right before the game, so he's not able to start.
Yep.
And then as this goes along, Eddie Atuesta gets hurt at the end of the game. These are the three best players on this team. But at the moment with Vela coming off, you're like, wow. Like, LAFC is the shining star power.
Yeah.
And 23 minutes in, it's like, all right, let's see what Danny Musovski and Corey Baird got for us today.
Hey, man, do not slander Danny Musovski. Big Danny Musovski guy in these parts. But I get it from Bob's perspective. Like, we've talked about it a ton with Carlos Vela. This is your crown jewel. This is the basis of your goals, your season. He is the MVP if he is healthy and your team is performing at probably 80 to 85%. But he's also had a lot of injuries. So when he shows even that little bit of vulnerability, I get it from Bob's perspective. You're like, no.
On ice.
No. Yeah, like, not in week one. We're not. I've seen this one before. We're not playing that game. You're out of here. But that's where I'm like, hey, this has happened so many times. Carlos, Bob, you got to have an established signal. You got to be on the same page here. You know what I mean? Like,
I've got a curveball. Maybe have someone who's a bit of a medical professional have some sort of device that can communicate remotely, maybe using radio frequencies, and have them tell you. That's the part. I don't even – first of all, it worked out for them. They won. Vela's safe. So, like, good. But just the way it happened was the issue. And, again, I don't think anyone's questioning protecting Vela early on in the season. It's just you'd think you'd ask before you make a sub.
It's just a bummer. You're watching this game on Fox. You got Austin FC's first game. You got the Stars there. You're like, this is going to be awesome. And then Carlos Vela's gone after 20 minutes. And you're just kind of like, wait, what just happened? You know, it's like it's like you're not discussing. Your third base coach is like flashing you signs. You're like, I guess I'm stealing home. You're like, I'm going for it. Like, here we go. It worked out in the end. 2-0. What'd you see from Austin, though, Doyle? What was this for a debut from a tactical perspective, from just sort of a – what are they going to be, maybe short-term and long-term perspective? Did you learn anything?
Yeah, I mean, I learned that all our assumptions was right. We're right. we were talking all preseason about how this is probably going to try to play like a Greg Berhalter U.S. national team look in terms of how they want to build out, the way they're going to use Alex Ring, how they're going to try to use their fullbacks, the role of the other central midfielders who are going to be kind of like free eights, except free isn't the right word because they're not interpreting, they're not finding space. They're playing this like very strict positional play. And I thought for 45 minutes, it was awesome. Like, they really caused LAFC some troubles. Now, granted, LAFC caused them a lot of troubles as well. But that's what you expect against any MLS team, especially a good one. But they are going to try to keep the ball, and they are going to try to build chances via possession and use the ball and their own spacing to sort of disorganize and disorient you. It was really, really pretty. Part of the reason it worked is because Alex Ring is awesome. He's just really, really good. Pochettino and Pereira, I thought, were not as good, but still really promising in that central midfield. And I thought Matt Beisler had kind of a throwback game on both sides of the ball. So if those guys create chemistry and are able to sort of be a foundation that the rest of the thing revolves around, this team has a chance to be very good and like maybe in the playoff picture.
And
because the ideas that they had were very clear and they executed on a lot of them. And if you can do that against LAFC in week one, then you're going to be able to do that against a lot of teams throughout the year.
And I would just say, I like the way they've built this team. We've talked about it on this show. They don't have pieces that are just going to go win it by themselves. And so that's what they've built themselves to do. I would say from Pochettino in this first game, I didn't think it was a perfect performance all around, but he has special moments in him that will allow them to break teams down. When he gets it off the fullback, kind of like angled into his feet to run straight at the defensive midfielder or center back, he's quick with his first touch and he's clean and he can beat guys. You didn't see match winning quality from Dominguez and Redes in this one, which, okay, it's your first game in MLS. It's been a while, fine. You'd like to see that going forward. But to Doyle's point, what they showed is what they need to be. And if they're starting to get close in week one, it means you don't have to catch up with which a lot of expansion teams do later in the season. They don't need to, well, we're on the road the first few games, we'll backload the schedule and get points in August. They're probably going to be sitting in a decent place throughout most of the year, which allows them to have some flexibility as they start to bring new pieces in or whatever it is.
I think they got six more games on the road before they go to the Q2. So they are going to find themselves tested in these next like month and a half, 2 months to get to that point.
Yeah, we know historically these early season road trips tend to wear teams down and they're playing worse at the end of them than they are at the start. But like I was impressed by this Austin team.
What do you think happens at forward? Not in the long-term DP sense, but in the short-term, we need to score goals to get points sense?
I think John Gallagher was so dangerous. He was so dangerous. Like his movement was superb. Obviously, he didn't finish the chances he got, but like he was finding chances. So I think Danny Huijsen's going to get another chance to be the center. And Huijsen was pretty decent as well. But like he naturally wants to come back and link up rather than find space in the box and you know, make those ghosting runs. And like, he's not a natural goal scorer. John Gallagher looked like a natural goal scorer. So I think those two guys are going to get a good long look. And then if it doesn't work, they have the ability to go out in summer and spend a little bit of cash and maybe find someone who is a match winner in those moments.
But I wonder how much of it's game states of, because him, Stroud, and Fagundes made a difference off the bench.
Oh, yeah.
Of like, this is our, let's throw something different at them.
Wait a minute. You're gonna mention Jared Stroud and not shout out Charlie Fiction? Come on now.
He's a legend. Everyone knows Red Bull 2 God Jared Stroud. But their ability to come on and change the pace, press a little bit harder, and give something different. I wonder if that, for Josh Wolf, is enough to say, well, we want that ability to do that rather than start them so soon on. I just have to mention this. My girlfriend kept watching the game, and every time John Gallagher missed a chance, she was upset that no one went over and was nice to him and was like, hey, you were really close. And I was like, I think they're kind of pissed that he missed.
Yeah.
And I don't know, it happened a lot.
Yeah, hey, look, Pablo Cisniega had a couple nice saves on him too.
He was really good. I think the best thing to come from this for LAFC was that performance from Cisniega.
And they needed it to be. You know why? Because they parted ways with Kenneth Vermeer.
Like,
the Kenneth Vermeer
so
era
much
is
that
over.
This weekend, yeah. I was like, wait, excuse me?
By the way, we talked to, I had this in my notes. I don't know why I didn't go to it. Inter Miami, the Matias Pellegrini situation was resolved too. Like, that game was so good. It was semi-resolved. The beginnings of resolution have this, the first steps. I don't know. Something happened.
Matias
Pellegrini he got bought out. So they are now roster compliant. But Commissioner Don Garber said in an interview during the game, or maybe it was during some game. I watched so much soccer this weekend, and Don was interviewed multiple times, that there are sanctions coming for Inter Miami. I mean, just the fact that they bought him out says that they knew that there were 4 DPs that they had last year when they weren't roster compliant. So we'll see what those sanctions are. But yeah, adios Kenneth Vermeer. It didn't really work.
He was great in CCL, to be fair to him. He was actually really, really good in that CCL run, and you'll always have that. But Cisniega showed in this game why he won the number one kit for this team.
Let's kind of run through some teams that impressed us outside the big, obvious storylines from the weekend. Can we start with Montreal? Georgi Mihailovic, he's putting his performance where his mouth is. He said to the critics after this 4-2 win against Toronto FC, hey, put your money where your mouth is. They were not happy about a lot of people putting them dead last in power rankings or dead last in their predictions for the Eastern Conference. Or
can we just shout out our good friend Ben Bear here? Because Ben, in his new Substack and then the new podcast that he has with Daniel Robertson, he did an insane 5-team parlay in which he picked Montreal to win this game, and he won the parlay. Well, the parlay hit. Ben was too much of a coward to actually bet a 5-team parlay. But go follow BenBear89 on Twitter. His new MLS gambling venture.
Yeah, but hey, if he had, it would have been like plus 1300. If he had, though, it's tough work if you can get it there, Ben. But look, I mean, expected goals were not kind to Montreal, but they piled on the bangers. I mean, Mason Toy was like Thierry Henry, who he's gone, but look what I learned. Top corner curler. 3 minutes in, they're ahead. Romo Kyoto, I mean, just ran away from everybody and roofed it. I mean, that was an incredible goal.
I love those finishes. This tight angle just like roofed it. It was incredible.
Georgie's nice little, he had that beautiful touch around, and then he basically roofed it too, and Montreal went running. I mean, it should have probably been 4-3. I think there was a PK
Don't disrespect my guy Kamal Miller's just posterized slam.
That was Victor Wanyama.
Wanyama?
It was Wanyama, yeah.
You want to attribute everything to Kamal. Wow, I know the Kamal love is big here. But yeah, Victor Wanyama. So it's basically the perfect game for the Impact in week one. You beat your rival. Your young striker, who didn't quite perform when he got there last year but had promise, scored a nice goal. Romel Kyoto, who has become basically your go-to attacking threat, got out on the break when he's at his very best, scored an incredible goal. You had Georgie, who's supposed to be this year's like Mason Toy, but with better results, who you traded a bunch of allocation money for, look good enough and score a great goal and call out the media afterwards. That's beautiful. Victor Wanyama, your DP, dunk header. And again, you beat your rival. Now, it wasn't good for CCL teams in MLS or Liga MX, but this is a huge win. Expected goals had them at one goal, and they went out and got four.
Yeah, and that's a little bit of a worry because, if you score four on one expected goal generated, like, you're probably not going to keep up that pace. But I do think that there's a danger in reading too much into single game expected goals. What I thought kind of defined Montreal in this one was they understood that if Toronto came out with the same players in the same formation, playing the same style that they did against Club Lyon, that Toronto was going to be dead. They just didn't have the legs to press three times in 10 days, especially when the first two games were so emotional. And one of them was at, 6,000 feet as well. And so I think they were prepared to exploit a weakness in Toronto. And like, if you're playing as a pressing team and your forwards are too exhausted to get pressure to the opposing defense, then the opposing defense is going to have the ability to start playing slip passes underneath to guys like Wanyama or Sam Piet. That in turn brings the opposing Michael Bradley and Ralph Priso up a little bit higher, which of course creates a huge gap between the Toronto defense and the Toronto midfield. And that gap is right where Montreal went to work by slipping Mihailovic or Kyoto in there or playing a long ball and just winning the second ball because Bradley and Priso are pushed so far up to prevent easy outlets. And so all the 4-4-2 did in this one was stretch Toronto out and give Montreal room to either play over the top or into the half spaces. And credit to Wilfred Nancy for understanding that this is what he was probably going to see in week one and having his team completely ready to exploit it.
The one thing with Montreal that I picked them last in the East.
I'm not changing that yet.
I'm not stepping away from that either. But one thing that I did forget is there are teams in MLS that don't bring it every week. And there are gaps in MLS if you are cohesive and you care. And if Montreal can do that, they'll be competitive and look for a playoff spot this year. I don't think they have the top end talent to completely compete, although they have young pieces that could emerge into that. But if they're that team that every single game is B to the wall, I don't know if we say that. I don't know if that's an inappropriate term. I couldn't think in the moment. and they know who they are and they're not spending energy in CCL and other things like that, they're going to be competitive. They're going to be fun to watch. They're going to be worth signing up for. And I think we talked a bit about what could this year be. And this was that game of the young guys look confident. They're a fun group. They believe in themselves and they're kind of like us against the world. And if I'm a fan, that's what I want to see. And I think they've got a shot to be competitive over the course of this year.
And it's worth noting that Montreal were picked generally near the bottom. They came out with real fire in their eyes and played a great game. Houston picked close to the bottom. They came out with fire in that, like, they dominated San Jose for the first 45 minutes. They played really, really hard. I would say pedal to the metal rather than your metaphor, David. Vancouver, they came out, they got a win. They, I thought, played really hard, even though they were missing some places. That's a team that was generally picked close to the bottom. Like, these teams are all, you know, taking a page from Adrian Heath's book. You use the power rankings to fuel you for the first couple of weeks, at least, and you use that disrespect. You put it on the bulletin board, and then you go out and you prove that maybe the gap between the haves and the have-nots in this league is not as big as it feels like sometimes.
Wow, look at that transition from you, by the way, into Houston, into Vancouver, into the power rankings, which, if you don't know, 11 a.m. Eastern time on Tuesdays, when the power rankings drop, Doyle and I are going live on Spaces. I believe this week, Doyle, it's on your Twitter account. So MattDoyle76, head over there.
Yes, it'll only be 60 to 75 minutes as opposed to this hour director's cut marathon that Weeby wants to do every week.
Yeah, you can let us know what you like more. But we will go through every single team. We will reveal the power rankings, react to it, talk about all the little things that we saw or want to see from these teams, and have some guests on, take some comments from all of you. So Twitter Spaces. Every single Tuesday of this season, 11 a.m. Eastern, we'll go back and forth on Doyle and I's Twitter accounts. Unless, I don't know, Extra Time gets access to Spaces or something else changes, we'll let you know if it does. You could tell for all these teams how much it meant. Like, the post-game whistle, sometimes I'm just sitting there, I want to see what the coaching staffs do. Like, you know, Mark Dos Santos and his squad that was an emotional. They were in church.
That was the team.
Yeah.
They then cut to the field and, like, big hugs, people running after each other. I mean, Lucas Cavallini broke a nice piece of equipment after he scored his goal. So I guess that's cool. Cheers to him. But it meant, yeah, you're right. And I was a little surprised by it. But it's going to be an uphill battle for all the Canadian sides. And I think they're kind of in that spot where it's like, finally, right? They haven't played a soccer game in 5 months. And it kind of was all worth it to an extent. And you could feel that. Especially also with the subs for Vancouver, of like, they just tried to get over the line with the 1-0 win and then build from there.
I do think it is important to know, again, because as you watch these games, you're like, wait, what's going on here? And then I see, like, Andy Rose on Instagram, and his family's in Salt Lake. I mean, this is watching the game. They're not at home. They're not in their sort of – there's no creature comforts for them when it comes to life and their families and their habits and all that. I mean, they're in Florida. This game that Montreal won is in – at Inter Miami Stadium, they just swapped out the corner flags.
Driving over from Orlando to play,
right? Like, it's just everything is so weird. So you can see how maybe that could be a disadvantage, but you could also see how coaches and players could sort of like channel that and say, "Well, it's almost like, you know, you're almost like summer camp in a way. You're like at your training camp. You're like, it's just us against the world. Like, we're in a weird position. It's on us. Let's go see if we can do it." Now, they got good results. The Chicago Fire just played 2020 out in 90 minutes all over again. 2-0 lead, they're rolling. Doyle's tweeting clips of beautiful team goals, and then by golly, you know how that's gonna end. They ain't gonna win that one. God. It ain't gonna be for them.
And like, let's just stop the game after that first Chicago. Like, the second Chicago goal was really nice too. That first Chicago goal from this weekend, folks. Go on MLSsoccer.com, go to the game, the match center for that game, and click on videos and find that Robert Berich goal, because the buildup was, it was like people were DMing me or slacking me, being like, this is the Barcelona of the Midway. Like, this, it was spectacular. Easily my favorite goal of the weekend.
Let me ask you this. So I was really entertained by this, especially the midfield three. With Chicago, I love the rotations because they Jimenez is always going to be deeper. Stojanovic is always going to be a little bit higher, but they can all three kind of fit into the same spaces. And so there's a lot of movement in there. 0-4, they started the Nigerian 20-year-old, I think, on the wing. and Berich got the start up top. 0-4 I thought was good. He's clearly a 9. Like, he wants a defender on his back. He wants the ball. Berich can do a lot of different things. How do you get them together in the right way? Is there a chance that you go 4-4-2 or you bring Berich underneath?
Yeah, I don't know. I need more data. I wasn't as impressed by 0-4 as you were.
I'm an 0-4 guy. Everyone knows I'm the 0-4 guy. Come on.
I do think it's telling and perhaps a little bit worrying that Ignacio Aliceta, who they, you know, spent a lot of money on, was ineffective last year and not in the starting lineup this year. Like, that is a pretty big worry for me if I'm a Fire fan, because like he needs to be good. He needs to, like, they need a real winger on that side who could be a bit of a playmaker, but also goal dangerous.
And
it can't just be Berich as the lone scoring threat anymore.
And he came on and played as a 10. So they didn't even play him on the wing, which is, as you said, exactly what they need from this team. But again, Chicago are entertaining. If you look up the match center in the middle of a match day and they're up by a few goals, that's when you should tune in.
Yeah.
Hey, just to see. It's like an experiment. Every single time they hit the field.
Also, we have to say good night for Buxa. Just to show that he, similar to Chicharito, up for it, engaged, physical, scores a goal. And Tejan, who there's injuries, so he gets the starting spot. But he's not a fullback. Everyone tells us he's not a fullback. So he has to win a starting spot at winger if he's going to be a starter on this team. Swap both wings, had an assist in this game as well.
Yeah, Gustavo Bo, nice little near post finish from some Tejan service. I kind of mentioned it. CCL teams did not fare very well, which makes sense. They expended a lot over the course of the last week and a half, 10 days or so.
Also, I love it. I'm jacked about CCL. Luke Singh's been a professional player for 12 days.
Yeah, I felt bad for Luke Singh. I did. I felt bad for him because the ball, that ball comes in behind off the turnover, and it's him and Romo Kyoto, and I'm just like, oh, damn, Luke.
There this are is good. Very few players who are going to get around Romel Kyoto with his strength.
But this is what we want as American and Canadian soccer fans. It's like we should want to see 19, 20-year-old center backs thrown into the fire. Get a lesson from Romel Kyoto in these games, because it's only going to make you better in the long run, both for club and for country.
The other two that we saw that did really well, an MLS side in CCL, played on Sunday on FS1, Columbus and Philly. Was 0-0. Lucas Zelarayán had some nice moments. He kissed the top of the post with an incredible shot. He has a really, really special ability to receive, turn, drive, see the pass, play the right through ball with the right weight. It just didn't come off for either of these teams. Anything from this game that stood out to you? It just wasn't quite there. I was disappointed because it started really well and really promising. I was like, oh, the aesthetics here are going to be great. We're going to see goals. It'll be back and forth. And it fell flat a little bit, which, again, they just expended so much over the last 10 days at the beginning of the season. You can understand it. Was there anything that you could pull away and say, okay, look at that the rest of the year. Okay, I'm going to be watching this.
I would just say I've been pretty hard on Luis Diaz. I've been underwhelmed by him. Obviously, he didn't finish in this game, but he was super active. And one of the things that I saw from him is anytime the ball came near him, he was already ready to go. Anytime the ball squirted out, if it was in counter press, whatever it was, he was ready to be aggressive. And I don't know that he's been that guy over the course of the last 2 years. Kevin Molino's out for a little bit, and like we've talked about it, they have depth, they can cover, blah blah blah, but if he's gonna produce at a, they brought him in as a young DP originally, if he's gonna produce at that level, this team's filthy, and that's how they're gonna end up winning a CCL. And so I think it was good to see that performance from him.
Ultimately a good result for the Union. Point on the road, they'll take it all day, every day. Hey, Orlando, I got confused there. I started with Orlando, and I'm like, they're the protagonists. They're the big guys. Sorry, Atlanta. Mm-hmm. I was like, Five Stripes, happy to go on the road.
Hey,
happy to
Andrew,
go to Orlando and get a draw.
How long have we been on? Because the father, dad is
I know. Well, he didn't start. It killed me.
Father,
he didn't start. I'm like, come on, Gabriel. You know this is the opportunity. But I think Heinz looked at those performances to start the season. He said, you know what? Maybe we're better off not putting all that pressure on Joseph in this game, because there would have been pressure, real pressure. If he started this game, the expectation would have been that he dominates Orlando because of all the talking that he did about it, because of all the like needling over the course of years in this preseason, because of his previous goal scoring record against the Lions, which is like 7 goals in 6 games, and glances back at Joe Bendick. And just, I mean, the dude trolls them when he's not on the field. So I actually thought it was a smart move by Gabriel Heinze to say, you know what, it's better off for the player and better off for our team to like slow play this a little bit. Maybe I'm giving him too much credit.
Weeby couldn't stand the game in which Joseph didn't score against Orlando.
I know.
He's just thanking God that Hindsight didn't start.
I
know.
I was really disappointed. When I saw that lineup, I wanted to like throw my phone and be like, God, how many times have I said the father is back? How many times have I written about this? How many times have I hyped this up and then it didn't quite get there, didn't deliver in that way? I mean, nobody delivered in the final third in this game.
Best moment of the game, Seba Mendez back heel to set up Pato. Pato takes too long, so he just runs through him and takes the shot himself. Let's go, Seba Mendez. I love him so much.
Speaking of Pato, an injury in this one that didn't look good. But there is news this morning. Julia Poe of the Orlando Sentinel says that the club, though they haven't given a ton of information on it, are saying that it is not an injury. It's a lower body injury that does not require surgery. So that could mean a lot of different things. But the fact that it doesn't require surgery is a really important thing for Orlando, because it doesn't look like Daryl DK is coming back. I mean, probably he shouldn't come back, right? Like, you know, you should sell him realistically. And then it's really sort of unproven in a lot of ways behind him, Pato, that is, as to what they have. So anything from this game that you would point to? I mean, I struggle to see anything other than maybe the fact that it looks like Heinze really has taken Ezequiel Barco under his wing. A lot of communication directly to Barco. Some better moments, though not the final product, which ultimately I thought there were better moments. I thought there were moments where Barco at least looked like he knew what he wanted to do, even though he couldn't do it. I don't know. Maybe that's
he's still taking three touches too many. Like, maybe he sees it, but like his timing on those passes. And then late in the game, he was out in space, isolated against a center back. And that's where you need, like, any $15 million
kill
attacker.
Kill him.
Oh, we're going to kill him. And he just dribbled right off his shin directly into Antonio Carlos, who was fantastic, by the way. Antonio Carlos was great. I think the big takeaway from Orlando City, first half, they played a 4-4-2, and it's weird because like the 4-4-2 these days is almost like a specialist formation. It only exists really for teams that want to get out into transition as much as possible. But Orlando City were playing it as kind of like a possession formation, which can't really do that anymore. And then they switched to a 4-2-3-1 in the second half, and I thought that worked a lot better. So I think going forward, especially as maybe they get some of the new wingers up to speed.
Well, also Pereira back. I mean, Pereira, that was the whole thing. He was suspended because, remember, he went 4 feet off the ground.
Right.
In their last game. But when we did their team preview, I don't know, whatever Weeby made me do, whatever it was, he is one of the most influential chance creators in the league.
He is.
And for them specifically, no one else really creates on their own outside of the pattern. It's through the pattern of play. But this was a fine performance. This is one of those players that they cannot reach their level without him. There are some, Seattle won without Nico Ladero. That's a massive moment. I don't know that Orlando's really capable of that for long stretches without Pereira.
And to be clear, Orlando City, when they were a great possession team at the start of last year, it wasn't just Pereira. It was Pereira, Rossell, and Jao Moutinho. They had none of them in this game. If I'm an Orlando City fan, I would understand being frustrated at not getting the full 3 points against a wounded Atlanta team or exhausted Atlanta team. This performance was fine. It was fine. Go into next week, get a little bit healthier, get a little bit better. It's Oscar Pereja. You should completely trust him to figure things out.
Yeah, I mean, look, and Nani completely trusts his barber. I don't know if that's the right move from Nani, but there was no creativity in the final third, but somebody took chances with that haircut. I'm not a fan of that one. 2222 player of the weekend, Caden Clark. He only scores bangers. Now, Rebels didn't win. SKC go to Rebel Arena and get one. Daniel Schallihive represents.
This is John Pulskamp erasure.
Yeah, exactly. Pulskamp, Gianluca Busio was a false nine. Alan Polito's on the bench celebrating. I mean, it was a big win for Sporting Kansas City, but that Caden Clark goal is just, it's absurd. Like, that's like Zlatan-esque stuff.
Did you think?
Yeah.
I thought it was a nice volley. I didn't think it was. Like,
really? His foot is like middle of his chest.
He's a professional soccer player, man.
Okay, how many other professional soccer players you see doing that? Not many.
No, okay.
Not many. Okay, fine.
I thought it was
this
really
is Caden
nice.
Clark erasure.
It was really nice. It was a very nice goal. And you can see why he is headed to RB Leipzig next year. What I can't figure out is why he was on the side of the diamond and Christian Caceres was at the point of the diamond. It was bizarre to see him out there because I think it limited his impact in the final third, and he is probably the most gifted player on the team in the final third. The pace of this game was ridiculous. I wrote about this in my column, we have this data thanks to Second Spectrum now tracking data that measures the number of possessions in a game. And the Red Bulls last year played at the most frenetic pace in the league, averaging 118 possessions in a game. In this game, they had 134.
Wow. Whoa.
Sporting Kansas City had 151 possessions.
I mean, if you go back to kind of traditional numbers, the passing percentages were not high. So I assume that, that's where the possessions come from, right? There's a lot of moments of ball loss, go the other way.
And this is what I was talking about with the 4-4-2. The Red Bulls play a 4-4-2 diamond. It is about generating almost like artificial transition opportunities where you're just creating so many 50-50s. Eventually you're going to win one and everything becomes instantly vertical. And see, in my mind, Philadelphia are really good at this while still playing soccer. I would argue that that Red Bulls game, there wasn't a ton of soccer
One of the things that stands out to me about the way Philly does it, though, is the way Shabilko plays and kind of finds the space off in the corners and then holds up the ball, allows people to come in and then connect in the 18. Red Bulls were, one, super narrow, and two, don't have anyone who's capable of doing something like that in that attacking front. And so that's one of the things that they lose that Philly's done so well over the last 2 years now, I guess, for New York. It was good to see them kind of back to who they were, I guess you could say. But you do come away from this game and say, this is kind of, it was energetic. They scored, they went ahead, then they didn't have enough to get over the top. And that's going to be the conversation, I think, most of this year.
Maybe, I don't know if you got to watch this one because I know you were parenting, but if you have Cam grab a couple of Matchbox cars and just smash them into each other for 90 minutes, that's a good replay of this game.
And then bring in Tom Barlow and have him smash one of the Matchbox cars by himself for a while.
And then Hernan Losada comes in and puts about 10 Matchbox cars in each hand and just throws them at each other. We'll get to that one in a second. We got to get to Brucho in the 2222 here. I wanted to be Bruchicadia because I want Jurgen Locadia to have a resurgence here.
You just want to be the one who made the nickname.
That's exactly right.
Susanna Collins made the nickname. She did a great job. Yeah. And you want to be the one who's like, this is the nickname now. Was that a good weeby?
not the best. You could have, a little whiny for me, but that's fine. 2-2 with Nashville. I was making jokes about Nashville when they were down 2-0 that they missed the bus. But they should have won this game. They absolutely should have won this game. This is turning into a nice little rivalry. And I should say not turning into, it has been one from the USL days. But it's a great result for Cincinnati to start the season. This is 1/6 of their goal production from 2020. So
they scored as many first half goals in this game as they did all of last year.
Ah, beautiful. Those are the stats that we love. Lucho Acosta looked good. This is the one I watched. I recommend it as my ESPN Plus because I just thought it had ridiculousness written all over it. And it almost did. I mean, there were some crazy moments in the second half where Nashville SC were looking around what do we got? What do we got to do here? Yeah. How do we get this ball into the back of the net? But Lucho found spaces, found gaps between the back line and the midfield. He got turned. His goal was very nice. The little chip over the goalkeeper over Joe Willis to put it in was really nice. Joe Willis's face after he gave up a PK and then it was scored on him was absolutely terrifying. But I think both of these teams can be happy about this. It's not the result that either wanted, but Nashville will believe they should have won. They put some goals in the back of the net.
I don't think Nashville's happy about this.
I mean, I'm not saying happy. I'm just saying it's okay, fine.
You literally just said happy.
Did I? unfortunately, this is all recorded, so I guess you can check me on that one. I guess for where the game state was, to come back and to get a point is okay. But I think from a chance creation standpoint...
Also remember, we said first three games is what leads the Open Cup. And they've got a good schedule, and this is a good opportunity. And dropping
does it lead to Open Cup?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Good point. Wow. I totally forgot about that.
Yeah. I mean,
well,
that's all.
Well played, Andrew. Continue.
Yeah. Yeah. We record this. It's a beautiful thing. What did you think of Brenner? Real quick before we get to the mailbag.
He looked like a player. I just liked the way he moved. There was not a ton of combination play from Cincinnati after the first 15 minutes. But he passed the eye test in game one. He got on the board, so there's not going to be any 800-pound gorillas on anybody's back. Same with Lucho. It was a good 15 minutes from Cincinnati, and that's something to build on.
And you saw later on, he wasn't getting touches. He wasn't getting opportunities. He was aggressive when he got the ball. He tried to make something happen. It didn't feel like he dropped his head and just jogged around at the top. Like, he stayed engaged over the course of the game, which he's going to have to do because – awesome, the attacking pieces they picked up. I don't know that they have a starting center back in MLS on the roster right now. That's going to make it really hard. And there it is. That's the truth.
Confirmation. Take confirmed truth there. These games happen, but we're probably not going to talk about them a ton. Dallas, Colorado, scoreless. The moment you probably saw is Michael Barrios standing in the wrong team photo with a big smile on his face. Early season game for both of them, just didn't have the sharpness. DC NYCFC, two really good goals for DC. Want to make sure Dave gets his package. Go get that door, man. Two really nice goals for them. NYCFC probably kicking themselves a little bit, but the Hernan Losada era gets off to a nice start. They need these moments. Mm-hmm. I think DC, as they make the transition, to sort of confirm that they're going in the right direction and keep getting buy-in, but you're not going to get a Brendan Heinzike like 30-yard laser beam and a training ground Julian Gressel to Knaus goal very often.
I don't know. Weeby, right now, Second Spectrum says Brendan Hines ilk, one banger per game in his MLS career. So.
That's true. You trust
Brendan Hines Ike.
Yeah.
I like better, though. Let's get to the mailbag. What do we got, Dave?
Real quick, give me a second to talk about Houston. Houston went out and they made some additions this offseason, and we focused mostly on Tim Parker for understandable reasons. Like, he is a center back in the prime of his career who has been good in MLS before, and I thought he was good in this game, even though he got trucked a couple times by Cade Cowell. The other thing that kind of flew under the radar was they went out and they got Fafa Picot and they got Max Iarruti and then they got Tyler Pascher from USL. Picot is one of the best pressing wingers in the league and has been for a few years now. Iarruti, his shot selection remains maddening to me, but he's one of the best pressing forwards in the league, and he has been for a while now. And then Pascher was an excellent all-around winger last year in USL. They pressed the hell out of San Jose. So just like, you know, applaud Tab Ramos for understanding the strengths of his roster and playing to it, which is what, look, if you are not among the most talented teams in the league, then you have to find your advantages where you can. And the advantages for the advantage for the Dynamo right now is that they have this front line full of guys who will just be miserable to play against. And the other thing that Tab did that I thought was really good was switch from the 4-3-3 that he used to an almost fatal extent last year to more of a 4-2-3-1 with Joe Corona holding next to Vera. Matias Vera. And Vera was awesome, by the way, but Corona added just a little bit more stability so that when they did turn the ball over in central midfield, it wasn't a five-alarm fire, whereas last year it was all five-alarm fires in transition for the Dynamo. So really good week one from Tab Ramos in Houston.
I was reading through tweets that we got putting out for the mailbag. Did you mention Boniac Garcia, center back extraordinaire?
Defender of the year. I was hoping, you know, if Kalen was on the show, you know he would have been wearing his old Boniac jersey and the stump speech.
Well, I'm just saying.
Boniac, the new Paolo Maldini as defender of the year for 2021.
It's not left back, but Bobby would have been delighted.
Oh, yeah.
By the way, there are two Boniac, I mean, if they're twins, so there's two of them. Does this mean that we now have in the future possible starting Dynamo center backs
That's
from the Boniek twins.
I feel like one should be a Beckenbauer style, like center back slash sweeper, and the other one has to be just like a goal poaching center forward.
Yeah, we need him. Come on, Boniek. We need a left footer and a right footer. We need balance back there. You need to be able to connect those passes to the outside backs, get the right angles on those. Let's go to the mailbag 401-206-0MLS, extra time at MLSsoccer.com. What do we got, Dave?
Mike Molinaro starts us off, basically says, cannot believe that 2021 season's here. As a Rapids fan, thinking about all they lost last year, he can't wait to get back to what he hopes is a growing Rapids fan base and a bunch of players they're going to grow with. He says he's got full trust in Robin Fraser and the culture that they're building, and he believes they'll be a contender this year. Go Pits.
Yeah, I think they will too. It started slow for them. They've had some very bizarre circumstances over the last 2 years, and I wonder what this year will be like when, one, other teams don't have bizarre circumstances and neither do they. Like the whole Anthony Hudson thing, us against the world, in comes Connor Casey. We didn't make the playoffs, but it was beautiful. I mean, that was awesome. And last year was just so start-stop for them. I'm curious to see whether this young team can sort of build on that and actually achieve what we all think their talent says that they can't achieve. I don't think it's a given.
Point on the road to open the season. No. I'll take that 10 times out of 10.
That's true. I have a tweet here I want to get to. Randy Bruce, more impressive brace, Rui Diaz or Chicharito?
I think given what it means for both him and the Galaxy, it's Chicharito. And I think the first goal that Chicharito scored, the one where he cuts across the defender and finishes left-footed against his body momentum, like that was the most impressive individual goal of the four. So I'll give it to Chicharito.
Yeah, I mean, the second was Christian Roldan put it on a platter for Rui Diaz. Like the weight of that pass for that, unbelievable.
And the first one, like Bruin just pulled it back to, these guys are so similar because they're so good at finding those pockets of space and thinking the game a second and a half ahead of the defenders. And that's how you get tap-ins. That's how you get completely open looks from 14 yards. And when these guys get that, they're just devastating.
The other thing about Rui Diaz is on pullbacks, he doesn't have to even shift his hips on goal because he can swing through so clean. And it's like he's basically never even in on goal. And then it's 1-0 or 2-0. Which is awesome.
Jonathan Scott knows what's up. Longtime listener, first-time caller. How does it feel to have basically every team that Extra Time and MLS.com ranked as bad this season play with a chip on their shoulder to prove us wrong? Montreal, DC, Sounders, Whitecaps, etc. Is media affecting the league? Exactly,
it is.
Jonathan, we set the narrative.
It's
we
Adrian
set Hage the tone.
World and will
everybody.
We're just pawns.
Exactly.
Let me take you through a live replay of week one of MLS every year. First 7 minutes, someone scores a goal. Oh, you were wrong about this team. Then they give up a goal. Well, it's early. Then the game ends exactly how we thought it would. And everyone goes, good thing you're idiots.
Yeah.
We'll move on from there. Yeah, Charlie here from Irvine says, this is a dig, but I'm going to allow it on the show. It says, gotta say, I've been to enough club soccer, high school soccer, and LA Galaxy games to say that the bank at a quarter capacity is still louder. Second half starting now because he sent it during the game. Hopefully Cal Jennings gets it done for Doyle. Doyle, are you the Cal Jennings guy?
I'm the Cal Jennings guy. Okay. I think it would be a great story if a former first round pick who didn't even make Dallas, but then tore it up in USL to the extent that LAFC paid a transfer fee for him, was like the answer at center forward as opposed to going out and getting a DP. But that was some very good LAFC shade at their southern neighbors.
By the way, the crowd in Miami was pretty lit as well. They were about it. So that was cool to see as well. That's really their first chance to do that. As always, we encourage you to get vaccinated and to be safe wherever you are.
Can we close out on an MVP email from David Cookie? He says, this was from last week. So he says, glad Weeby's coming out of a CCL malaise. There are two additional reasons to be excited about MLS's success in CCL. First relates to conversation you had a couple weeks ago about U23 failures in Guadalajara. Every additional game that a George Bello, Anthony Fontana, or unfortunately, he said Aiden Morris, which now doesn't seem to be the case.
Oh, my God, we didn't.
Can play in Mexico or Honduras makes us even better going forward. The other is, additionally, last night's Toronto win over León was particularly important for next year's seeding of teams. The CCL draws based on how teams in that country's particular slot have performed in the tournament over the last 5 years. beating the fourth Mexican team ensures that next year, no two MLS teams will have to play each other in the first round, increasing our chances of advancing more teams into the quarterfinals. And then he finishes with, dare to dream. The higher you fly, the more spectacular the fall.
I'm on the side now of like, it's all gravy, let's get it. I was in a really bad spot there for a while. And just so we end on a down note, man, Aiden Morris out for 9 to 12 months towards ACL. That's painful.
It is.
That sucks. It sucks for the kid. It sucks for the crew. It's one of those moments. These things happen in sports. We see him. Jordan Morris is off trying to live his dream. The unthinkable happens, but just best Aiden Morris in his recovery. Hope he gets back better, stronger, and continues on the trajectory that he was on.
I'm not going to allow you to close on this. I'm going to close on CONCACAF finally officially announced the schedule for CCL, and guaranteed, because Atlanta's playing Philly, an MLS team is going to be playing CCL in August in a semifinal, which
is
awesome. And that's what I've been waiting for. I don't know. It's kind of like now I got to watch the season as like, which of them has earned CCL?
Exactly.
Like if Philly knocks out Atlanta, now I'm all Philly for the next 3 months.
Who do you think in August would be the better team? Anders is tearing his hair out right now.
I think Atlanta have the higher upside because of Joseph, but Joseph hasn't looked like Joseph yet. Philly have looked really good. Philly have surprised me with how good they've been despite their injuries and the guys that they sold this offseason.
I'm rooting for Philly. They earned their place in the CONCACAF Champions League. And we're out with that mic drop. Let us know what you think. Thursday, we're back with Charlie Davies to preview the weekend. Any thoughts, questions, takes that you have, 401-206-0MLS. Extra time at MLSsoccer.com. All the coverage right there. MLSsoccer.com and the new MLS app. We'll see you later in the week, everybody. We'll be right back.